All right. Well, thanks for coming. Are you guys excited to be here? Woo, yay. Yeah, thank you. So you got that in the recording, right? Excellent. Okay, so welcome, and we're glad to be here. We are going to talk about SQL Server in a Microsoft Azure virtual machine.
Yay.
We'll probably mess up and call it Windows Azure, because that's what we've been calling it forever. So if we call it Windows Azure, it's Microsoft Azure. And then things that... How do you get the best performance out of your SQL in a VM? What are your data disks? What's your OS disk? Why would you use a data disk versus, why do you put your TempDB on a data disk versus a scratch disk and things like that?
So right. How many people are now? Because we asked a whole bunch of questions to the audience already. But are you, besides Azure VM, are you experienced with virtualization at all? You are, right? The crowd is mostly virtualized. So good. So you have an idea of a lot of the concepts I think we'll be talking about.
So virtual machines, right? Okay, how many are familiar with the blob storage? Okay, but
I should raise my hand too.
Yeah. You should, because okay. It counts. All right, so we're going to talk about that. You guys familiar when you create a VM, it goes into blob, VHD goes into blob. All right, so we're going to talk about that. So who are we? So my name is Scott Klein. I'm a senior technical evangelist out of Redmond. I cover the... our cloud data services, SQL Server on-prem, plus our cloud data services, so SQL Azure or Microsoft Azure SQL Database, SQL in a VM, things like that. There is my Twitter handle, my email address, my blog. So if you have any questions, you want to talk, chat after, feel free to reach out.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Thank you. Let's move on.
We're going to try that again. We're going to one more. Hi, I'm Tom. That's kind of still weak, but that's all right. So my name's Tom. My official title now is Head Geek for SolarWinds. And I sometimes tweet. You can email me. That's my work email address. You can also find me blogging over at thomaslorock.com. Enough about us.
Are you guys familiar with PASS? Anybody familiar with PASS?
Oh, yeah. Yeah? I'm a member.
President of PASS.
Shh.
Thank you very much.
I am.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. So here's what we're going to talk about today, okay? So blob storage, just kind of quick overview of what Azure Blob Storage is. And then we're going to get into things like instance sizes and the limits they have, types of disks that when you spin up a VM, what do they mean? So like data disks, scratch disks, things like that. We'll get into networking bandwidth. Latency is always an issue when you're dealing with the cloud, right? How you get the best performance out of your disks. Network bandwidth, we'll maybe a slide or two on that. And then we'll get into like disk caching, right? So you know that when you spin up a VM and you add a disk, you can add say, I want caching. What effect does caching have on that, right? And then some best practices of troubleshooting, right? Because we're here about, the first part is more of from a VM perspective, but then we're going to get into, so what are your best practices for running SQL on a VM? And this is kind of the whole purpose of this session, right?
Yes.
And then we will get into this gentleman's question here. We will get into some backup, right? If there's anything, any questions you have beyond that, we're happy to answer questions. But this is what we thought felt would be important to talk about that. Is this all right?
Yes.
Cool. All right, so let's move on. Azure Blob Storage, right? You guys are familiar with this. This is the ability to say, all right, when I create a VM, the VHD goes into Blob Storage. You obviously need to have a Blob Storage account. It goes into Blob Storage, right? And when you create a VM, because it's a Blob Storage, you automatically get how many copies?
Three.
Ooh,
I'm not supposed to answer.
That's all right. Three copies, right? And so because it's, and the great thing about this is these are persisted, right? So this is a quick overview. These are persisted. This is a shared service, right? It's not a conventional disk system. These are, it's a shared service. So your VHD will probably go on the same, probably disk subsystem as somebody else's VHD. Okay, you guys are aware of that, right? So there could be some noisy neighbor scenarios that you might run into, right? So at that point, it might move your, at some point, Windows Azure may say, hey, we're going to move your VHD or your VM to another host, right, to get better performance, things like that. But keep in mind that this is not, there are locally attached disks, right? You got to drive C and drive D, but everything else you add, these are in Windows Azure Blob Storage, okay? There's no direct perf correlation between a disk request, right? So there is a subsystem. Everything's going. We will talk about this later, but all the performance is going through the virtualization layer, right? So it's got to go through several layers between the VM and the Windows Azure Blob Storage, right? We do say, right, that there is a some level of SLA, right? We don't guarantee a perf SLA. And why don't we do that?
Because you're smart.
Thank you. That is the right answer. No, I'm kidding. Why don't we guarantee a perf SLA? Well, because every environment's going to be different, right? Your performance requirements are going to be different than somebody else's performance requirements, right? So it depends on how many data disks you use. It depends on what your IOs are. It depends on what kind of VM you actually spin up, right? So we can't guarantee a performance SLA, okay?
But you do, but you don't. You give me a max. Like, I can get max IOPS.
Correct.
You don't guarantee a minimum threshold. So it's a difference.
There's many differences, right? So if you look at that, right, we could say, based on the Azure storage, we can say, okay, total capacity is now, and they just announced this. So if you were paying attention to the announcements on Monday, right? So new VM sizes, no total capacity is 500 terabytes per Azure account, right? Total request rate, so 20,000 transactions per second. And then based on locally redundant or geo-redundant, depends on how many gigabytes per second in and out you get, right? So you guys familiar with that, okay? You know what geo-redundant and locally redundant means? You guys familiar with that?
Yeah.
Locally redundant means is when I create my storage account, when I create that VM, any blob, it goes into that one, all three copies go into that single data center, okay? That's local redundant. Geo-redundant says that one of those copies is going to go into that next nearest data center. Right? So for a higher HA SLA. Right? Does that make sense? There's a cost associated with that because now we have to replicate data outside. So egress and ingress. Right? There's that outbound data charge. Okay. Any questions? Does that make sense? All right. So let's keep going.
I have a question.
Question.
Just to let
you
know.
Can a speaker ask a question?
On the very first slide after we talked about naming things as Microsoft Azure, we have Windows Azure and then Windows Azure VM in one of the bullet points.
Yeah.
Somebody should fix that.
We'll get the people upstairs to fix that. Oh, the stickers?
Yeah. It says it still. It's a rebranding effort.
Right. It is. We'll get someone to hop on that right away. Right away. New stickers coming. Right. Okay. So you guys are familiar with when you spin up a virtual machine, right? There was one. You didn't get to pick any tiers, right? Now, when you spin up a VM, and we'll show you this in a demo, you spin up, you get a basic tier and a standard tier. Has anybody in the portal been in the portal since Monday? You? Anybody created a VM, I should say? Anybody created a VM since Monday? Right, so you get the basic tier and the standard tier, right? Basic tier is, and there's some differences, and what I want to point out here is there's three different things. So basic tier, you get A0 to A4, that's it.
Right.
Okay, but the thing to point out here is the max IOPS, and now the different temp drive sizes. So depending on the size of the VM, you get a different temp drive size. But what I want to point out here is the max IOPS, right? So it used to be like 1 by 500, 2 by 500, right? This is now 1 by 300 for your basic. So a little less performant, right? But these are meant for things like, you know, a single application, dev environment, QA environment. I just spin something up for testing really quick or, you know, not a high important workload type of scenario. Does that make sense? Right? So if you just need to spin up something real quick, QA environment, dev environment, you don't care about, you know, it's not a high workload, not a high, you know, IO scenario, spin this up, right? On the flip side of that is the standard, right? Here's where you're back to higher IOPS, right? Still temp drive sizes, right? A1 through A4. Actually, we get even bigger sizes. So they just announced A8 and A9. Okay.
Monday, right? Monday?
Huh?
Monday they announced
it? Monday they announced it. Right?
Brand new.
Okay. Right now in the portal, when I created some VMs yesterday, they announced it, but I don't think they're available in the portal yet. They're coming very quickly. But the A8. So, but notice, you know, the amount of memory, and so what's the difference between, you know, what is A8, and anybody know what A8 and A9 gives you over the A0 through A7? Tom knows. Yes?
48.
Yeah, better, faster processors, right? Better bandwidth to the box, more bandwidth to the box, but that's the important stuff, right?
Right.
Is is these are designed for, you guys familiar with SQL Server 2014 Hackathon in-memory stuff, in-memory technology, if you're familiar with that? These boxes are really designed for those kind of workloads, right? So if you're running Hackathon in-memory, right, in-memory is you need a memory to support those workloads. So this is why we introduced the A8 and A9. Faster processors, better bandwidth, things like that. Okay? All right. So, and again, it's depending on what your workload is. You know, do you need an A7 or do you spin up maybe a couple A4s or A3s? Depending, you load balance those. Right? So there's some things you can play with. All right. So disk performance. So you know that when you spin up a virtual machine, you get two disks. Right? And based on what we just saw, right, you get a drive C. How big is drive C? 127 gig, by center, 127 gig drive C, okay? Then you get a scratch disk. This is a temp drive, and based on what we saw here, depending on the size of the VM, depends on the size of your temp drive, okay? So anywhere between, let's say, 20 gig to 605 gig, right? So you get a drive C, a scratch disk, and then, as you know, you can attach additional data disks to this. And these data disks are just page blobs that you can say, attach empty disk. Pop quiz really quick. When you attach a, and how big can these data disks be? 1 terabyte, right? 1 terabyte. And depending on the size of the VM, depends on how many of these data disks you can add, correct? All right. So when you add a 1 terabyte data disk, does it go out and does it reserve 1 terabyte of space for you? Absolutely not. No, it's just kind of a quota, right? Okay, so the scratch disk, as it says, it's really used to store temporary data. Anything that you want persisted, do not store there. Do not store there. Because if you were to reboot, anything that's on that D drive is lost. So don't store anything on the D drive, okay? Things like if you want to create a simple database, you know, and by default, if you spin up a SQL VM, everything is on, you know, the data pass, the log file pass, everything. The temp DB is on the C drive, right? If you want to create a simple database, that's probably fine, right? But if you want a high performance, then get that stuff off, right? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. All right, so does this make sense? Right? So pretty simple. But again, C is persisted, and anything on the data disks are persisted. Anything on D, the scratch disk, is not persisted.
And I think that's a point that gets overlooked.
Yes.
Quite a bit. And people say, hey, what happened to that file I had on that D drive? Well, it's gone. Yeah.
And given the fact that, you know, you can go, oh, I got 605 gig I can play with.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me put stuff there.
It's an easy mistake that people make, so don't right. be
don't,
that person.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, and do not put your temp DB there.
Oh, we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that later.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil
that. No, we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that later. All right. All right, so let me do a quick demo. All right? Number three, right? Number three.
I don't know. Where's your plug? Did you get? Oh.
Oh, number three. There
oh,
we go.
You didn't press the button all the way.
Hit number four, actually. All right, so I have three VMs, right? And we talked about the different disks, different types of VMs we can create. So here I have, if you look at this, this says, this is A7, right? Because I can't create no A8 and A9. And this is A7. So if you look at this, you can see there is a drive C and a drive D. Decent amount of memory, decent amount of CPU, right? And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to run a little app. So what I've got is I have this little simple application here, right? And if you guys have seen the the Hackathon, the in-memory OLTP demos, right? You'll be familiar with this app. What this app does is this just does spins up a number of threads and does a high write and high read, right? So all the threads are just doing inserts and updates into a database on this machine, right? And what we're going to count is this little nice little graphs and charts is how many transactions per second we're going to get, okay? So keep in mind, this is, everything's on drive C. We didn't put anything on drive D. Everything's on drive C. So given that, how many transactions per second do you think we're going to get?
Six.
Six transactions per second. Anybody want to guess a little higher? Who said seven?
Seven. You don't want to go over,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Lowest without going over. That's
this is not the Price is Right. You don't have to, right? This is not the Price is Right. You can get up to but not over? No. All right, so let's run this, and we'll just get a good, right? Okay, so we're getting a few more than 7 transactions a second, right? So we're getting about 250, right? It fluctuates, but about, let's just say, 250 transactions a second. Keep in mind, this is all on drive C. So what we have is we've got a lot of contention going on, right? The log's on drive C, the data file's on drive C, right? Okay, so let's stop that. So you guys, you okay with this? All right, so let's keep going. Let's jump over to this other VM that's called with data disks. So you can see over here, I have a drive C, a drive D. I also have...
Is this also another A7?
Everything's an A7. All these VMs are an A7, right? So let's open, just so you can see, right, computer management. So I've got, so it pulls up, right? So you can see I've got 3 1-terabyte disks attached to this, right? Drive F, H, and G, right? So F, H, and G. Let's run that same app, right? How many transactions a second are we going to get? And do not say 8.
So...
9. Thank you. See, this guy's thinking ahead. I like that. Right. All right. So let's run this and see how many transactions we get.
So have you laid out the files on this one?
Yes.
How have you laid it?
Oh, have I laid them? What do you mean?
The
disk. Yeah, so that's a good question. Yes. Yeah, so I have on F is my MDF, my data, and on H is my log, right? My temp drive is still on drive C. Okay? Because we'll talk about that a little bit.
In the first box, data, log, temp, all on the OS drive, the C drive.
Trigger, yep.
So here he's just split that out.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for bringing that up. So my MDF, my data file is on drive F. So everything, there's nothing other than the temp DB, everything's off drive C. Okay? And notice what we're getting. So we're fluctuating anyway between, we're getting about 4 times the number of transactions per second. True? Just by getting things off drive C,
sure.
Right?
True. It,
3 to 4 times, right? So just by getting things off drive C, and using these data files, I get better performance automatically, right? Now, we could play with this a little more and say, well, what happens if I move my temp DB off of drive C? I'm probably not going to get anything because right now I'm not using temp DB, right? So I probably wouldn't get any better performance.
If you're not using temp DB, why?
Yeah, I'm not going to get it, right? Okay, so you all right with this? Okay, good. So let's stop that. So again, just by moving things off drive C, I get better performance, right? And we'll come back, we're going to talk about caching, and then we'll actually come back and do another demo to see what does caching do for us, right? So let us move on. Questions so far?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Oh, wait. Hold on. The ladies first, sorry.
Did you get the question? Is the storage thin provisioned or thick provisioned?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by thin or thick provisioned. So we only charge for amount of space used, right? So I'm not sure if that's...
So if I allocate 1 terabyte, I'm only using 200 gig.
You only get charged for 200 gig. Yes. Okay.
So
that's okay. Not official Microsoft term, so...
you can think of it as thin provision, but it really isn't. What you can do is it's going to reserve that space for you, but you're not going to get charged for it until you're using it. That's a little different than the concept of thin provisioning in a VM. Here, it's more of like a bookkeeping thing.
Right.
Does
so
that help?
We say, you know, near endless capacity, right? So if I say, it's a quota. This is why I said earlier, it's a quota. If I create a 1 terabyte disk, I get 1 terabyte. It doesn't go out and say and carve out a 1 terabyte chunk. Otherwise, we would charge you for that 1 terabyte. It's a quota. So when I create 1 terabyte and I only use 200 gig, I'm only charged for that 200 gig, right? Oh, yes, a question.
When you're spinning up these VMs and adding these disks, are you given the ability to allocate block size?
Okay, repeat the question.
Yeah, so the question is, when I create these disks, do I create allow block size?
Are you able to choose a block size?
Yes, so that's the allocation unit?
Yes.
Yes, well, actually, you know what, I'll jump out and I'll show you that. Right. And so when I did this, and that's a good point, so let me jump out and I'll show you that. And then we'll get to your questions in a second. Is that all right? All right, so let me jump out to number 3. Roll back. All right. Yeah, well, I was going to demo this anyway, but thank you for bringing it up. So what I do is I got these virtual machines, and here's these three virtual machines, right? So no data disks, with data disks, and with data disk cached, right? So we looked at this one, and we looked at this one. So when I go and say attach disk, attach an empty disk, I can say what's the size, and is it, you know, what's my cache? None, read-only, or read-write, right? To answer your question, when I go into the VM, I go into here, like, and we were actually talking about this earlier today, right? And what effect this has in on the performance. So if I right mouse click and say new simple volume, right? So what I did is I created an empty data disk, okay? And it actually shows up as 500 gig, right? So it says you get 500 gig, but it didn't go out and slice up 500 gig. If we walk at this and say, all right, I can say what's my allocation unit size.
So next question for you, what do you want it to be?
Yeah. Actually, and so we will actually get to that. Actually,
another bonus question. We don't have anything to give out. The only thing we can give out for answering questions are hugs. So
yes.
I'll get to you later. But so what is the default? It says default there.
What's the default?
If you just take the default? Anybody know? It's 4K.
4K. But it's actually a dynamic because, as we learned, it grows based on once it hits like what?
16
terabyte. 16 terabyte, it'll go to 8K.
Which you can't do.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So
if you just choose the default, you get 4K.
4K.
Right.
So these disks, what I did is I created a default, right? So I'd probably get better performance just by when I, you know, recreated them with 64 and reformatted them as 64K.
That'd probably be a good demo of the show.
It'd probably be a good demo of the show.
Let's get to that.
Yep, this guy. You could, yeah, absolutely.
So and repeat the question?
Thank you. So the question is, why wouldn't we just add all the maximum disks and then stripe those disks, right? Is that your question? You could, absolutely you could, right? There's nothing to stop you that says, you know, don't do that. I mean, you can actually, absolutely can do that. In fact, if you want to, not really a best practice, but if you need, you know, one of the recommendations is if you need bigger C is create data disks, then stripe C, D, E, F, or C, F, you know, and some of your data disks, right? So there's what we're talking about here is just some of the best practices, but that doesn't mean that you can use your imagination and say, you know, I'm going to try this. So absolutely, go create 16 1-terabyte disks, stripe those, and hey, have at it. Right? There's no reason you couldn't do that.
So repeat the question.
Yeah,
so do you want to put your databases on a RAID 0?
Repeat the question.
That's what we're trying to do. So that's your question. Would you want to put your databases onto a RAID 0?
Right. Let's assume you're not splitting up the database into file groups, no partitioning. You just have a large table. You want to get the most I/O out of the block.
Yep. So what you're saying, why wouldn't we, you know, put a database on a striped disk? No, I mean, so think of it. This is the standard virtualization. The only difference is that, you know, we're not backed by spindles or a disk subsystem, right? Well, I mean, eventually way back, you know, you do get disks. So this is, if you want to try that, there's no recommendation or no best practice that says don't try it. So if you want to try that and create 16, you know, and have one drive F that's 16 gig, you know, have at it, and you know, and with your RAID 0, and try and see what kind of performance you get. So what I like about this is the ability to say, the flexibility to try different options easily and quickly and very inexpensive. So if you create 1-terabyte disks, put your database on that, it doesn't give you the performance you want, delete those, and add disks, right? And so within a matter of what, 5-10 minutes, you've done a test, it doesn't work, try a different scenario. And on-prem, that would probably take you, what, several hours or longer? But in Azure, you've probably done your test, finished in, what, 10 minutes maybe? So it gives you that flexibility to say, what's the right environment? What's the right setup for me? So try that, right? And it may go, yeah, this works for me, because you're just striping across. If you don't need the multiple file groups, right, that works. Okay.
So I just want to make a point about that, is that way back when, let's just say, I don't want to say I'm old, but we'll call it experienced. But, you know, you had these ideals of what you wanted to do with your database files, right? RAID 1 for your log, right? All these different configurations. Unfortunately, the boxes themselves only had space for 4 hard drives. So you're kind of limited to what your mythological ideal would be for this configuration, if you could have anything. Here you get to have everything. What would you like to do? Would you like to try it with the mirror? Sure, because you're right, because the blob storage itself has redundancy built in. So maybe a different software RAID is going to help you here? Go for it. Does that help? Yeah?
Was there another question? Another hand over here? Okay.
We'll go one more, and then we're going to move on.
We need to move on. Yeah. Do we have a tool built in that measures the transactions per second? There is no tool built in, but we do give you, like, I think one of the demos we'll show you is a script that will go and say, hey, it'll do a SQL I/O testing and kind of give you an idea of what kind of performance you're going to get out of these disks, right? And we'll also talk about one of the slides in a few minutes that talks about disk warm-up, right, and why you want to do some disk warm-up. We'll get to that, right? But there's nothing built in, but you can run, there's like a script that we can hand, you know, that's available to say, that will kind of give you an idea of what you're going to get. Okay? All right, so let's move on. So disk I/O performance predictability. So there's several things that we can give you a fairly good idea of what you're going to get, but again, remember, there's no SLA guarantee for performance, but there's certain things that will affect the performance, right? Things like Windows Infrastructure Server. This is a shared environment. Again, your VHD is might go on the same physical disk. Noisy neighbor, you might get performance. We might have to move that. Windows Azure might have to, Microsoft Azure might have to move that to another disk, right? So things like resources like the host, storage services, network bandwidth, are these all going to have an effect? And they're shared among, all these resources are shared among other people, not just you. So this can have effect on what your VMs, how your VMs can perform. When and where you provision your virtual machine matters, right? So I may provision my virtual machine and it may get provisioned on this rack, but we may move it to another rack, right? So where and when has an effect on what it's going to. Now, I wouldn't say dramatic effect, but it could have an effect, right? Maintenance operations have an effect. So things like if you're doing patching or maintenance, or if we have to do some patching or maintenance, right, that can have an effect on the performance of your VM. Now, that's not going to be very drastic, right? And we let you know when we're going to do some maintenance. Right? We always send out an email saying, all right, we're going to do some updates and maintenance, but that could have an impact on your performance. And then you have to look at cost and control, right? So when you use cloud-based services, the storage options in Windows Azure, you're going to sacrifice, so again, virtual machine versus IIS versus PaaS. So you're going to give up some control versus, you know, if you want PaaS, you get more better cost, but if you want IIS, you get more control. And with that more control, right, there's more things you have to do with that, right? Does that make sense? Right. So at that point, you're like, okay, so do the math. What we're saying here is the takeaway from that is do the math. What makes sense for you? Does IIS make sense for you? Okay. And then lastly, disks, local attached disks. So there are attached disks, the drive C and drive D, but again, we talked about that. So there's certain things like the shared service, things like the noisy neighbors, things like when and where. So all these things are going to have a performance, could have a performance effect on your VM and SQL. Okay? Any questions about that? Yes? So when you connect to,
I think you're missing a word, versus. Windows Azure Disk versus the.
Yeah, I think there might be a listen back there. I'll have to go back and look, right? So it could be versus attached disk, right? So, and that's a good point, so thank you. So the question is, what do we mean by the bullet point 5? And we'll get to this in more detail later on in the presentation, because obviously, as you saw, drive C, it's not a VHD. Drive C is still a VHD, it's not a locally attached disk. And what this references here, in this bullet point, is locally attached disks on-prem, right? So you're going to get, how do I say this the right way? When we're working on-prem, we got a drive C, drive D. We could have locally attached disks, right? Whether they're SSDs or spindles or things like that, right? Versus Windows Azure data disks. So we have to do the comparison between, do I have a Azure page blob? You know, what's my performance comparison between an Azure page blob and a locally attached disk on-prem, right? And do the testing, right? And this is where you get into things like, do I do striping? Do I do different disks? Do I just one big RAID 0? Things like that, right? Experiment. This is not a session about here's the only way to do it. This is a session on test and experiment. Okay? All right, caching, right? There's a two-tier cache, right? So what happens is that it will say the most recently accessed data that's stored in RAM on the physical host. So as you're going and saying, as I'm accessing this, it'll Windows Azure will say, I'm getting all this data. This is being accessed the most, so I'm going to store that in physical memory, right? The problem is that this cache is shared by the virtual machine, all the virtual machines on this host, okay? Not just your virtual machine, okay? But then you have the less frequently accessed data that's stored on a local disk, and this, right, this is a cache space reserved for your VM. So there's a secondary cache that's reserved for every single virtual machine, right? It's not shared across cache. So there's a two-tier, okay? Does that make sense? So you've got to be careful on how you use this, right? And we've talked about when we spun up that virtual machine, you've got the none, the read-only, and the read-write, you know, the caching, okay? When do you use what, okay? So what is the purpose of the virtual machine? What is the purpose of the cache, right? So we're going to jump out and do a demo. Why would we use, when we think about cache, we say we cache things because we want better performance, right? So the most frequently accessed data, give me that data pretty quick, right? Do we want to do that if we have a high OLTP, high write update scenario, would we use cache? No, right? We don't want to use cache there, right? Because like this says, the frequently accessed data. So anything that you access all the time is going to be cached. Right? That's not a write scenario. That's not an OLTP scenario. So things like what we want to do is reduce the latency. Okay, the bullet point number two. Reduce IO, disk IO latency when the IO rate is low. Plus, we want to improve boot time. So several scenarios are why we want to use the disk cache. We're going to jump out and do a demo of the disk cache. Okay. So this is, again, you cannot cache the scratch disk, obviously, but you can support, there's certain cache modes, and you saw this in the demo. I can do none, read-only, and read-write, right? So in the OS, none is not supported, but you can change that to be supported, right? Or on the data disks, they're all none is the default, but you can change that to read-only and read-write. And we'll see a demo of the kind of effect that this has on that same app we ran. What does caching do for that type of app? Okay, all right. Now, two more slides, and then we'll get into the last demo. Then we'll turn it over to Tom. Okay. This is network bandwidth and delay. The biggest thing that we have to worry about when we're dealing with the cloud is latency. Right? We've got big bandwidth. Doesn't matter, right? But we're always dealing with latency. So, you guys are familiar with a cloud service? What's a cloud service? This is think of it as a boundary, right? What's a cloud service? Yeah, sort of like external access to the machines. It's a boundary, right? When I create a VM, it says you want to create a cloud service. So when I create another VM, I can say add that to the same cloud service. So it kind of groups things together, right? That's a cloud service, right? So everything a lot of the services that we can create can go in this cloud service. It's like a boundary, kind of a protection, right? And then we can do an affinity group, right? This allows us to say when I create an affinity group and I create these virtual machines, so if I say create this VM and it goes in this one side of the data center, if I create a second VM and I don't put it in an affinity group, Azure's going to go, you didn't specify an affinity group, so I'm going to create it clear over here on the other side of the data center. Make sense? So if I say an affinity group, what an affinity group does is says let's keep them in a proximity to get the best performance. Okay? So don't put them in, you know, different sides of the data center. Keep them in at least the same, not the same rack, but maybe the same, you know, in the near proximity, right? So we can reduce that latency, okay? We also have to keep in mind that if you create multiple VMs in a cloud service, and you want to load balance, your requests are going to go through a load balancer, right? That will add some latency. Not high latency, but again, depending on the number of transactions, that's going to have some effect on the latency, right? And some best practice, if you can, right, connect to the VMs through their dynamic IP address, right? If you can, right? Especially if they're in the same cloud service, right? So do these make sense? Right, so this is almost no-brainers, but A lot of times people don't think about these, right? So when you have the option in creating your VM and it says, you know, do you want to put this in the same cloud service, in the same affinity group, your answer is yes, right, for performance reasons, okay? Now, this is just a pretty picture that shows the limits the network traffic has, right? So your network traffic is going to go through several layers, right? So it's got to go through the through the hardware, through the Hyper-V. So everything's Hyper-V, so it's through the hypervisor, down through the network hardware layer, and out to the cloud storage, right? This is not to scare you to say, you know, holy cow, that's a lot of layers it has to go through, but just kind of an idea of the architecture that these VMs sit on, okay? So any communication, it's got to go through through the application, from the data disk, back through up through the layers and things like that, right? So any questions about that? Maybe if we have time, we'll go into deeper that. Because what I want to show you is one last demo, then we'll turn the time over to Tom. Okay. And, okay. So then I have this cache. This is the exact same VM. Well, I should say the exact same VM. This is a duplicate VM of the one we looked at. So you can see drive C, drive D, FGH. Right, my data file's on F, my log file's on H, my tempdb's on drive C. The only difference is that when I went and said, let's go back to the portal real quick, and said attach disk, I said I want read-write cache. That is the only difference.
The first one is at?
I said none.
The first one has none.
The first one has none.
Okay.
Right? This one I said I want read-write cache. Okay? So if we run this one, we're on the same app, okay? Thinking about how, you know, what we just learned about caching, what kind of performance are we going to get on out of this VM? And don't say 9. Are we up to 10? Thank you. All right. So we got almost worse than we did when everything's on drive C.
That's horrible. We? That was the comment.
Was that, that was horrible?
That's horrible.
That's horrible.
I agree.
Yeah, that's right. Who said that? Well, I didn't say that.
Not just horrible, but
that
easily,
is horrible.
Easily avoidable.
Right. Why are we getting such horrible performance? What's that? Well, it's not reading and writing twice, right? This is, so remember what the caching does, right? There's two layers of caching. There's two tiers of caching, right? So caching was used for temporary storage, right? So if we jump back here, let's take a look at this, right? Leave that running for a minute, okay? So let's talk about these. I'm going to leave that running and see if we can get better performance, right? So let's talk about these disk recommendations, right? One of the things that they say is if you've got a fairly small database and that database isn't going to grow, you know, that big, feel free to put that on drive C, right? But if you've got a fairly, you know, a high OLTP type database, don't leave that on drive C, right? But what are your cache settings mean? So cache, right, use none for, and this is what we did, use none for your high OLTP workloads. This is what we did. This was the second demo, right, when we got 3 or 4 times of performance. This is when you use none, right? Use read if your workload is sensitive to latency, right? Use read-write for sporadic disk access. What does sporadic disk access mean? I don't touch it very often. It's more read than write. Write update, right? Because the reason we're caching that is because we want quick access to that data, right? So this app was doing a high write, high update. Caching isn't going to save me anything. In fact, it's going to create more overhead than anything because the system's got to go, what am I caching? And right, it's probably just crapping all over itself, right, at that point. So when we say sporadic disk access, right, these are for things like I don't access it very often or it's just, you know, maybe static type of data, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Any questions about that? Yes. So when we say sporadic, repeat the question. So sporadic, what's the ratio between read and write? Is when you say sporadic, typically, you know, higher read, so maybe 60, 70, 80% read than write, right? Because the reason why do we cache data in the first place? Well, quick access to that data, because we're reading that data, right? So it's more, you know, higher, let's say 70, average 70% read over write. Yes? I think there is a PowerShell command that will actually allow you to change that. I'd have to go back and look.
The question was, can you?
I'm so bad at that.
Yeah, you are.
That's right. See, he's not here to present. He's to remind me to repeat the question. Can you change the caching on the fly? Do you have to delete the disk and recreate it? I think there's a PowerShell script that allows you to. I will double check that, but I don't think you have to delete and recreate. I'll double check that. All right, any other questions? Yes. So the question is, are there any plans to change the type of caching to like write-back caching? Did I get that right? Okay. So that's been asked several times, and they're looking into that.
Right. So that's a big maybe.
It's a maybe. Let's just say it's on the radar.
On the radar, but not the roadmap. I guess is how they would put it. Like, they're aware that that would be desirable.
Right. But, yeah. Because that's asked a lot, so it's probably higher up on the radar than...
Yeah.
Right. That's asked quite a bit. Okay. Any other questions? Was this helpful? Yeah. Okay. All right.
So far. So far, now I get to talk.
Yep.
The level of helpfulness now. Yeah. All right.
I'm here for you.
So we've talked a lot about building the VM so far. Let's talk a little bit about best or common practices for SQL Server. You're going to find that a lot of these are not all that different from how you would do physical box or a box you're doing in VMware or Hyper-V right now. They really aren't. But a lot of times, you need to hear things more than once before it kind of kicks in. So we've got a laundry list of things to go through. You'll notice we did update one slide to say Microsoft Azure. I like how it says MaVM.
MaVM.
We already saw a place user, your data and log files on different disks. Kind of a no-brainer. If you haven't been doing that already, I don't know what to tell you. Start. Yeah, okay. If the OS disk has to be used, and we talked a little bit about this as well, disable the write cache. Put it at read-only. It's probably not going to be good for you to have that write cache on if you're using the OS disk for your database files. And also remember that the OS disk has a size limitation. So the white paper on, what is the name of the white paper? Just SQL Azure VM or something?
Yeah.
You have a link at the end.
I have a link at the end. We'll give you the white paper.
Well, the white paper talks about database size limitations, something like they try to say limited to only 20 gigs. I kind of question that. What are you using the other 100 gigs for? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And it didn't talk about that being an instance or a specific database. So I would just tell you, hey, remember, your OS goes to 127 gigs, and that's it, right? So keep that in mind if you are using the OS drive, that you aren't expanding that beyond the 127 gigs. Avoid OS disk striping. Use SQL striping instead. More data disk when I/O bound. There's a great white paper from Cindy Gross that talks about how if you want to increase your max IOPS, you can do so by just adding more data disks and striping across those. Then there's this little section. This kind of gets into a little bit of the white paper where they talk about warming up the disks, right? I think we have another slide for that later on. But warming up the disks before they measure performance. So any ideas as to why that is? If you use virtualization already, you might have come across this already. What was that? Tiered storage? Not exactly. So in virtualization, is something being idle considered a good thing or a bad thing? No, it doesn't depend. It really doesn't. In the physical world, in the old world, if you were idle, everything was great, right? You had a big beefy server and it was hardly used, performance was through the roof, your life was great. Then the finance guys figured out how much money was being wasted on all this hardware and how much extra capacity you have. Hey, virtualization sounds great. So things that are idle in the virtualization world are kind of thought of as a bad thing. So even in VMware, probably Hyper-V works the same way. If you have to spin up a resource, if somebody needs a resource, it's a resource queue, right? They may have to wait. So this idea of warming up the disk is simply that you have to understand, you might be placed in the queue before you can actually get the performance you're waiting for because you've been idle. If you're idle, they don't care about you anymore. They're going to focus on the people that are actively doing things. It's like warming up a car. So just keep that in mind. You have to warm up. Whether you do it before you start your testing or your workloads or whatever, or whether you just know it's going to happen at the start of your workloads, really doesn't matter. Just know that there could be a ramp-up time if you've been idle for a while. Make sense? Okay. More. Consider, anybody here, well, it's always an enterprise feature, right, that I ask about. Anybody here using data compression? Yay. Anybody here wish they could use it? Just a few, right, because you're not running enterprise? Yeah. So you should consider, if you have an I/O-bound workload, a lot of times, a very easy fix for that could be native compression, okay? So row page compression, something to explore, something to consider. You can reduce your I/O, you reduce your logical I/O. However, what goes up? CPU. What are you really paying for when you go to an Azure VM? CPU. So it's one of those things you might want to track. But if it reduces your workload and if performance is great, it might, the cost might offset the, cost benefit risk. Right. Instant file initialization, another standard that you're probably already doing. Don't use autogrow. How many people here really are able to pre-allocate the size of their database files, set it and forget it? I know. How many people wish they could? Yes. All right. So we all wish we could do that. So guess what we tell you? Hey, pre-allocate the files, right? That would be great. Of course, we still rely on autogrow behind the scenes. But if you could, try to size it correctly right from the start and monitor it. And if you get close to size, and you let it autogrow, but don't start at, you know, 1 gig and go from there, right? Allocate it as soon as you can. 64K allocation unit size. Sir, that was the best question because we had a slide for that. We were going to talk about it, but we skipped ahead just for you. But yes, 64K allocation unit size. You're in Windows Server 2012. However you've been doing disks in 64K, you're going to do that exact same thing. All right? So three options for placement of data files. And we had a couple of gentlemen ask questions about this. How do you want to really do this? Well, you really have three options. You can place it files across multiple disks. You can create a single OS volume on top of multiple data disks, or you can create multiple Stripe volumes, each with one or more disks. And why do you do this? So option one, with the more data disks, you're going to get higher bandwidth and throughput. Okay, so maybe that's what you want. The second option, you're going to end up with you're going to end up with aggregate I/O across your database files, right? And so that might be more desirable for you. Option three is really the one that's going to give you the, precise file placement for maximum performance, is how they put it. But option three, I think, is what you're going to end up falling into more often than not when you're building out a SQL Server Azure VM. You should know that you have three options, but I think you're going to end up with, just by default, going with option three.
This guy's question over here. Why can't I do that, right? Yeah, go ahead. Please do. Right?
Yeah, you're probably going to end up doing, but honestly, you're going to experiment. You're going to think, hey, for this particular workload, this application, they want something RAID 10. Well, is it really better for me if I do that for this particular whatever, right? I just like the fact that I'm not limited to a certain number of disks or a particular VMDK file or anything like that. TempDB, we had talked a little bit about this already. So you're going to put your TempDB on your OS disk or your data disk. So what one didn't I mention? The scratch disk, yes. So you're not going to put your TempDB on your scratch disk. OS disk, so you're going to remember your OS disk has a size limitation. So your TempDB, if it tends to grow in size for whatever your workload is, it's going to be a consideration for you. I would tell you, you're probably going to want to just create a dedicated disk. Maybe put it into a RAID 10 and put your TempDB on that. That's probably going to be what you end up doing. Again, it's very similar to what you're doing in the real world right now. I'm sorry, physical world, on-premises. I say real all the time. Real, virtual. Configuration, what do we have here? The three reasons for it. Performance variance, So you get more apps from the OS disk or a data disk. Yep. Configuration upon VM downtime and performance bottleneck. Heavy use of the scratch file can introduce IOPS constraints. So if your workload is dependent upon tempdb, and if I were you, I would take care to put my tempdb on the best possible disk configuration, and I think that was going to be option 3 for you. We talked a little bit about disk warm-up, priming the pump. I won't spend a whole lot of time about this again.
I have a comment about this, if that's okay. Disk warm-up. So when you're hitting a when requests come in to and hit apply, where do those requests go through to hit your page blob first?
Could you repeat the question?
Sure, for you? Yeah. All right. So I got a page blob, right? And if I'm accessing that page blob for whatever reason, my request has to go through what first to hit that? Right? Why are we talking about disk warm-up? Right? It's got to go through. It's got to go through a set of load balancers, right? So
yes.
The reason we prime the pump is because when we're not using that disk very much, it's going to go through. It may go through one or two of these load balancers, right? These things that distribute the requests, right? As we prime the pump, right? That tells Windows Azure we may want to start spreading those requests across multiple. Nodes, they're not load balancers, but you know, nodes to make a request. So when we prime the pump and warm this up, we get better performance, we get better throughput in I/O, right? If things start cooling off, then Windows Azure says, well, I don't need that many load balancers. Let's say I'm going to call them. I think there's another word for that, right? Yeah. But so when you want to get better performance, you know, one of the things, you know, Tom and I talked about earlier, you know, before the session was, you know, how do we guarantee performance? Well, if you know that, like, for example, your users, you're going to have a high, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you're just going to start getting hammered, maybe you run some SQL I/O queries for a half an hour to just start to prime the pump, right? So that when the users come on, they get that performance, right? So you shut it off, and then you just come in, and they're good, right? So this is what we mean by prime the pump, is that you want to tell Azure that we've got a lot of users coming in, and so we want to warm up the disks by telling Azure we've got a lot of requests coming.
Yeah, that's the key point. It's the multi-tenant. It's the shared thing. It's just similar to the virtualization environment you have right now. You said 30 minutes. I don't think 30 minutes is how long you really need to do. But there's two key things you have to understand. If you're idle for about, I think it's 20 minutes. If you're idle for about 20 minutes, that's when you're going to need to go back through what is the warm-up phase. And I think it's only about 10 minutes.
So it depends. Like the white paper that we'll push you to actually tells you, I think the number is 20 to 30 minutes.
20 to 30?
20 to 30 minutes,
okay.
Right?
So if you've gone idle, then yeah, you're going to want to start the car before you get in it.
But we're probably both right in that it's experiment with it, right? The key here is that if you are idle for a period of time, then Azure's going to go, we don't need this many load balancers, yeah. So we're going to scale you back. So when your users come in,
I was going to say, I'm sorry, but this concept of the disk warm-up is one of the things that you find in the white paper that's it's come out of real-world use. So you're asking, are there people really using it? Yes, because this is what they're finding, and then it gets published in the white paper for everybody else to understand. This is the nature of the beast that they've created, this thing called Azure, and how it works best, especially for something like SQL Server. Question. Can we explain more about the load balancers? I can't at this time.
Yeah, so
that's magic. Usually, is how it just works.
Picture this big black box. All right, moving on.
Yeah,
no, I'm kidding. No, so think about it. So what happens is you've got this disk subsystem where all the basically blobs are sitting, right? And I've got a picture in another deck. Maybe if we have time, I'll pull that up, right? Because it might help you. But we have these load balancer mechanisms in place to say any load balancer. As all the requests come in, it's going to hit any load balancer. Any load balancer can talk to any one of these partitions, right? So we think about partitions, right? Azure blobs, they're basically disk partitions, right? So my blob could be here, and if this one partition starts getting, you know, a noisy neighbor, and we move that blob onto another partition. Any load balancer can talk to any partition, right? Does that make sense? Right? So as things are quiet, right, then it's going to be Windows Azure is going to say, okay, well, we're going to, you know, we don't need that many load balancers talking to everybody, right? So it might scale back a little bit. But as things start warming up, this is why we talk about warming up, it's going to be, all right, well, we need to start priming the pump a little bit. We need to start to get better throughput, right? So it's we've got this whole, let's say, array of load balancers, and each load balancer can talk to any part, every load balancer can talk to every partition, right? And so to get the best throughput in I/O, you want more load balancers operating for you, right? So if that makes sense, I'll pull up, if you want, after the fact, I'll pull up a picture. Yeah, can we picture that as storage paths? I don't know what you mean by storage path, but
no, I would say it's more like a network path.
Yeah.
There's a question in the back.
Yes. Yeah, and in fact, best practice in the white paper, best practice says. That like this is what I was saying earlier. If you know that your users are going to, you know, you've got at 8 a.m. all your users are going to start high I/O, schedule something at like 7:30, right?
Yes.
Sure, you could do that.
Yeah, you could just say. That's right. You could just say every 10 minutes, let me run something and make sure my disks stay warm.
Yep.
Of course, you know you might end up paying for the resource consumption of that over time, but. Right, exactly. Right. You wouldn't certainly overdo it, but just enough to make sure that the engine stays warm. Yeah, that's exactly right. So performance monitoring, which is probably something you're going to want to be doing if you're going to be priming a lot of this, is understanding what the workloads really are. So what you end up really buying when you're in Azure, what are you renting, right? You get some storage, but you're sharing some processor time. So you end up, and of course you pay for data coming out but not in. I always joke, I say it's like New Jersey. It's free to get in, but you have to pay to get out. That's how I think of Azure. So there's a processor time, the min, the max average, and all those, the standard performance counters that you're probably monitoring right now. Those are the key ones that you'll pay attention to when you're running in an Azure VM, because that's really going to help you later on when you try to understand if your workload, say, you might need to go to the next size up, or maybe you can go to one size down. Right? So these are the things that you monitor. Now the dashboard, and we have a picture of it. I think we can show you. Do we have another demo? I forget.
Yeah, we can.
But I think we can show you the dashboard so you can see it as well. Batch requests per second, just to get you understanding. Remember, you pay for it coming out. So you want to know just how active your servers are in terms of batch requests. And there are some DMVs, of course, the same ones. You're running SQL Server, so the same ones you've been using. I think we actually can show you IO virtual file stats as well.
Yep.
But same ones you're probably using right now. Gave you an example of three to look at. So you can look at, you know what your queries are waiting for. I'm kind of big on wait stats myself. You want to know where your waits are, where your resource bottlenecks are. Exec query stats, always good to go to. And DM IO virtual file stats. That's going to help you understand more if you're getting the IO throughput that you're expecting. Or also let you know how busy you really are too, right? So another little chart. Everybody loves charts. I'm not sure if you can read it from back there, but it'll be in the slide deck for you to go through. Some logical disk counters to look at what their storage terms are measuring and suggested actions. Those are the titles at the top. I can't even read them either. That's small. I'll read it off of here. Probably all things that you are already looking at, disk reads and writes, average disk second per read per write, average disk bytes per read per write, so a lot of throughput. And average current disk queue length. So if you have outstanding or waiting IOPS, some of the stuff you can get out of DMIO virtual file stats, and disk read and write bytes per second. Troubleshooting. So troubleshooting, not in terms of query performance troubleshooting, but troubleshooting, understanding if there's something wrong with your Azure VM. So Perfmon's one way. Plenty of third-party tools out there to measure the performance, not necessarily that you have to go buy a third-party tool for it. A lot of the stuff you can do for yourself. PowerShell to automate things, like if you want to do SQL I/O testing, if you're just curious to know if you're really getting the IOPS that you've been promised. So that's something I would always recommend. Automate little things like that in order to collect the details you need. And, of course, DMVs that we mentioned, extended events as well that you can dive into. So anything that you're doing right now for troubleshooting, right, understanding the performance of the server, understanding the performance of the engine. Whatever you're doing right now, just keep doing. just bring that SQL Azure VM. Did I say that wrong? SQL Server in an Azure VM. Just bring that right into whatever you're doing already. Just add it to the fold. Here's that little screenshot. And it should say Ma Portal. So these are the charts. You get some, if you haven't seen the, anybody here not seen the portal ever? Right? Everybody's seen it. You've never seen the portal. It's really cool. You should look. Somebody show him one right now. Somebody's got a laptop. Log into the portal and show him.
Oh, we got the portal here.
You do? Oh, great. All right, we'll show you in a second. So you get a nice dashboard, and they're improving the dashboard all the time. You get a lot of really cool things inside the dashboard. You probably haven't seen the database one either. Database one gives you a lot of good details that you can't get out of Management Studio, and I wish they would put into Management Studio. So there's a monitor tab for the storage account. Under the configure tab, you can find that. And you can get information about your storage blobs as well. Storage analytics. You can enable monitoring for the blob service itself. So there's two versions of that. There's minimal and there's verbose. Which one do you think has more overhead? Yeah, that's pretty descriptive, right? So you shouldn't trip up over that. But minimal will give you the minimal amount of information when it comes to the logging. Verbose is going to give you just about everything. Obviously, that could be a little bit of extra overhead to collect the information, but there are going to be times where you need that detailed analysis. The aggregated data is placed inside the storage account inside a hidden container called logs. So when you say hidden, you're saying that they can't get it from the dashboard? Or are you saying they have to, do they have to PowerShell their way into that? PowerShell your way into that. So if you're in the portal itself and you can't see it and you're like, I know it's here somewhere, that's right. PowerShell is your friend for that. This is my favorite. Moving to the cloud will not overcome your poor design choices. Good database performance.
In fact, it exposes quite a bit.
Yeah. Great database performance starts with great database design. Bad code will trump good hardware any day of the week. So don't think that moving to the cloud is simply going to overcome a decade or more of very, very less than optimal design choices. Baselining. If you're migrating your stuff to run in SQL Server and Azure VM, if you don't have a baseline performance right now, you need one, because when you get there, somebody will tell you it's slow. And your question will be, what do you mean by slow and how fast should it be? They'll just tell you, I don't know. It should just be faster. So if you already know what the queries are running at, if you have a good baseline, you've collected it to begin with, it'll be an easier conversation for you to have later on if you're migrating your stuff. Now, if you're just spinning things new in Azure, then nobody knows what the performance should be, and that's good, actually. They might just tell you slow, but at least they didn't know before. So either way, you want to figure out what it should be, agree to it, and then performance tune from there. We have a thing for backups. Oh yeah.
Yes.
We have you have a demo almost ready? All right. I'll talk.
So there are a couple things that let's just jump out real quick.
Okay, jump out. Yeah, jump out.
So want to show you. So we talked about that system that sys.dmio virtual file stats.
Just to remind you, 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Yep. Okay.
And counting. Okay. So this is the sys.dmio virtual file stats, right? And it tells you a number of things. You know, how many reads, you know, amount of time. This is, like Tom said, this is what you want to monitor to say, how's my disk doing, right? So I can say number of bytes read, number of reads so far, things like that. This is just a very simple DMV to say, what's going on with my data disk right now, okay? And then someone asked, it says, how do I determine, you know, what kind of performance can I get? So what I'm going to do is jump over here and to this one. And what I'm doing here is there's a, let's go down, scroll down just to 10. Okay, so there is a, we've got, what they recommend is that, like for example, I've got on this virtual machine, I'm saying run this file and do it against drive C, drive F, G, and H, right? And what it's doing is it's saying running this. All right, so we edit this batch file, and it's you know, give me random 8K reads and writes, give me random 32K reads and writes, give me small sequential writes, right? And I've got it only running here for 120, you know, for like 2 minutes. What this does is I said it, I said pipe this out to a, and hopefully we'll have time, it'll finish here, but I said pipe it out to just, where's it at? Results.txt, right? Write it out to a file. And if we have time, if it finishes in time, I'll show what the results are. But what this does is it gives you a nice text document that says, here's the kind of information, here's what we see from a performance I.O. standpoint that you're going to get on these disks, right? So this information is also in that white paper, but I would highly recommend that as you, like if you're doing striping, if you're just doing different data disks and things like that, run this, and I would run it for more than 120 seconds, right? The default set was, I think, you know, 300 seconds, right? This value right here. So, you know, change that to 300 and let it run for a little bit to give you a good idea of how it's going to perform. But when you start adding data disks, if you want to know what your performance is going to be or what kind of IOPS you're going to get out of these data disks, run this script because the reporter will come back and say, here's what we think you're going to get, right? But again, and this is also a great way to do disk warm-up, right? Mm. So maybe run this for a little bit, okay? So this is a great way to start looking in, look at what kind of performance you're going to get out of your data disks, okay?
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Can SQLIO be run on physical servers? Yes.
You do need to download the SQLIO XE. This is not installed with SQL Server. It's additional download off of MSDN. Download that. It just has to be in the same directory as this, the bat file, next, you know, the and command file, but have at it. All right?
So under 10 minutes, so we're going to finish up real quick.
With backups.
And then take questions. So, yeah, backups. Yeah. So
the only reason this guy's here is, okay, yeah. Finally we're getting to backups.
So my first recommendation is that you do them. Yes, you laugh. How many times have you seen the people, hey, something bad happened and I have no backups. What can I do? Nothing, right? So whatever you're doing today for backups, you can keep doing. However, what's one of the things you pay for in Azure? Storage, right? So you may or may not want to consider having your backups on, say, what we'll call a local drive to that VM. You may want to create some drives and have there, but you know you have to manage that. You have to develop. You have to put all this together. So you might just want to consider external storage. So with SQL 2014, even before that, you had the ability to back up to URL, so you can have a blob container somewhere else, so external to your VM. I would actually be recommending that you're probably considering doing this anyway. So if you already have some storage out there in Azure and you're collecting backups, you can simply just point to that. It's real easy to do so. This is the syntax. It says credential name. You create the credential when you're creating your storage account. And you just take that name, you put it in, and it just works. So my advice is when you're doing your backups is consider using external storage as opposed to creating drives for that box. Your SLAs and requirements might be different. If it was me, I would start architecting a slightly different solution than what's been done historically. Yes, sir.
Do you have your SQL being backed up in one data center?
No, put them in the same data. So the question is, do you want to put them in a different data center?
Well, I'm wondering if it counts against your egress.
Yes. So does it kind of get your egress? Data into a data center is free all day long. But the minute data leaves a data center, that counts. So if you're backing up from one data center to another data center, you're going to have costs associated with that.
However, it might be a smart idea to have your data in a different, or your backups in a different data center than where your, it might be a good idea for you. I don't know.
Well, but since you're backing up to blob storage anyway, if you turn on geo redundancy,
yes,
it's done automatically for you anyway.
But guess what? Geo redundancy is also not free, right? You have to pay for that.
It's whether you do it yourself or you turn on redundancy. There's no change in cost. It's the same cost. What you're doing is saying you back up to a local data center, but by turning on geo redundancy, that one of the copies is to the next nearest data center. Same cost whether you do that or do it yourself. But it's done that one by turning on geo redundancy. It's done automatically for you.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Can you simply do a backup like you're doing right
normal
now
backup.
To a disk, right? And that was the question. And the answer is yes, absolutely. I can just run a backup command and go right to a disk.
Sure.
I'm sorry. So is the question, can I stripe a backup across disk and URL?
No.
Oh.
Can she said.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So question is, can I do, it's a three-part question. Can I do a full backup to a disk like I'm doing now? And the answer to that one's going to be yes. Can I do a differential to URL? And the answer's going to be yes. When I do a restore from that full, you mean diff now. Okay, so it's I thought you meant. So if I want to do a restore from the diff, it needs the full. That is a great question. I'm pretty sure you can because the MSDB is going to know where those locations are. Yeah, but when you do the syntax, you're going to say restore. It's good. Yeah, it should. I'd love to see it, but it should work just fine.
Yeah. Yes.
What about tape backups?
Yeah, you still,
so the question is, what about server tape backups? I have a question for you.
Why?
Okay. Okay, so if she has a requirement, a 30-day retention requirement, then that might be a reason for having server tape backups. So can you do it? I'm going to say you can. You must be able to do a server tape backup, no?
Not in the
traditional sense, huh?
Not in the traditional sense.
But it's blob storage.
Well, you'd have to, so we're talking SQL in a VM, right? So we'd have to take that, we'd have to back up, copy that down locally, and then back it up to tape.
But it's all virtualized, right? It's so if I know that these are containers in blob storage, there should be a mechanism for me to save those containers. So Data Protection Manager would be one way to get that done.
Yeah.
So I know, your traditional, whatever third-party service you're using right now, I don't know if they offer that for you, but it's probably you can't just plug and play and say, just point at my Azure VM and an IP address and have it all work. That's probably not going to be the case, right? But there are ways for you to have what you fulfill your requirement, which is you need point in time for 30 days for this particular server. That absolutely exists. I've never seen it done because usually most people are, if they're in Azure VM, they're not that concerned about the tape backups. I can certainly understand there'd be requirements for that, but I haven't come across anybody who's talked to me about it. And so you mentioned DPM. So DPM, are you familiar with Data Protection Manager? Well, if you're not familiar with Data Protection Manager, that might be one way to get it done. I was just thinking going right after the blobs, because I know I could just PowerShell my way through that, grab those, store them somewhere else if I really, really needed to.
Yeah, either way, you're going to have to pull them from blob storage, so however you do that.
Yeah, you probably you've got to do it all yourself. So DPM does it for you, but you'd want to power down that VM, and then save the file because you're not going to QS the stuff. I don't think yourself. Yeah, so it's a little extra overhead, but I'm sure it can be done.
A minute 30 left.
I'm sorry. A question right here.
Yes.
So, you talked about VM.
Can we use DPM to restore to your test and dev from Azure?
You know, so I think there's even a better way to... I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to recommend something that's probably even better, right? Maybe. So it depends, and Tom can correct me or chime in here. So when I create a virtual machine, I can actually download that VHD. Instead of doing a backup and bringing the backup down, why don't I just copy the virtual machine down and load it locally?
Well, right?
It could be a little more complicated if I've got multiple data disks and things like that, right? But at the same time, it's really not you know, instead of doing backups and using DPM, why don't I just use DPM or something to back, just download the whole VHD instead of doing backup. So it's an option, but I'm not saying that could be not be the right option, but you've got flexibility there.
So I just want to say our time is up. We've used up the full 75 minutes, surprisingly. So you're free to leave. If you have additional questions, just come forward. We're happy to answer as many as we can, but I just don't want to feel that people need to stick around if they didn't want to. They wanted to stay up.
Thank you.